You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, we are back, and we are back with one of my favorite guests. We are back with Tom Handler. Tom is my favorite advanced planning lawyer for family office protection. He's on the show regularly. We're talking about trends in family offices, and I actually met him at the Wilson Family Office Conference, where one of my top family office guys introduced Tom as the top family office lawyer in the U.S. In fact, Tom was recently named the 2015 International Wealth Planner of the Year and the 2015 Wealth Planning Game-Changing Lawyer of the Year, and he received the 2015 Michael J. Brink Award for Leadership and Service in the North American Wealth Industry. So high five to you on all the awards, Tom. You've got a really big signature block there.
Thanks a lot, Jim. It's great to speak with you. Good evening.
Hey, thanks so much. And, you know, I thought that today we could talk about something that I've been hearing a lot about. It's called the Family Holding Company. What's that, like a family conglomerate, or how does that work?
Yeah, you know, these things have been around for a long time, and the initial version was a family limited partnership. And I think they've been around for about 75 years, you know, if not longer. And the idea is to have a entity into which the family can contribute its holdings, meaning stock and bond portfolios, land, farms, businesses, whatever it is the mix of their assets tends to be. And so it allows you to hold these things in one big basket. And they were very compelling for many years, and used mostly by accountants because we had very high tax brackets and no kiddie tax. And so you would have perhaps the mom and dad generation in a 70% or 50% bracket, you know, while the children might be in a 15 or 20% bracket, for example. And so by giving them some of the interest in these various businesses or investments or gifting it or transferring it to them, the income would flow to the children, and on behalf of the family, they'd be paying in a 15 or 20% bracket and arbitraging the tax rate between mom and dad. So overall, the family would pay some less tax as long as mom and dad are willing to give up the ownership of a portion of the business or the farm or whatever they had. So it was a very effective strategy until the kiddie tax was put in place, which basically forces the children to pay in the same bracket as the parents. But once the children are either at the age of majority or out of college, then they pay in their own bracket. So the arbitrage still continues often for 20, 30 years, and maybe the children never get in the parents' bracket. So it was largely an income tax play, but it was also a method where family members could own the business or the assets that might have liability, and they would be limited partners. So by definition, it would protect them from liability of those underlying assets, whether someone, you know, drowned in the lake or got hurt on a piece of farm machinery or the roof collapsed on the shoe store. The individual, they would lose that business, but they wouldn't be able to go at them personally and force them into bankruptcy. So it had some measure of asset protection as well. And what happened eventually is that people began to realize that these vehicles also had the ability to provide discounts in the estate, meaning that because those limited partners had very limited rights, they can't vote the interest, they can't sell the interest, they can't pledge it or use it as a down payment for a mortgage, they're very limited in what they can do. And so when you don't get all the rights associated with the asset, you don't get the whole asset. So the discount then might be 10, 15, 20, maybe as high as 40%. Off of the inherent value of the asset, because in effect, the older generation has kept the right to control it and vote it and pledge it and so on and so forth. And so the discounts made a lot of sense, and so it allows someone to use these vehicles to obtain a discount in the estate. So,
let me ask you a question here. So I do a lot of real estate. It sounds to me like this is a structure that would apply to a lot of my people that I do business with, even, in fact, some of us in our own firm who hold a lot of property.
Absolutely. And, in fact, you know, when real estate syndications were really in their heyday in the early to mid-'80s, almost all those structures were limited partnership-type structures, and real estate was probably the dominant interest held in those structures, you know, for a very long period of time. So you're right, it's really an ideal vehicle for real estate. It's still very commonly used in hedge funds and private equity funds today. So these holding companies have evolved, and now we have more choices. So we have, besides a family limited partnership, we have a family limited liability company that's now in every state in the United States and, you know, many foreign countries as well, and the territories. And we also have a series family limited liability company, which is a limited liability company with extra rights that says you can identify various series, and these series emulate cell legislation common in many foreign countries, so that Series A assets, if they blow up or have a problem or a liability, the creditor cannot go after Series B or Series C or Series D assets. So each cell is protected from the other cells within the enterprise. So you sort of have two levels of asset protection, one from cell to cell, and then secondly, an outside person coming at the enterprise is limited in that they can't get the limited partners who weren't involved in the activity. So a significant amount of asset protection. So we now have three types of these family holding companies, and currently probably FLLCs are the most common version if you were to do one today, but historically family limited partnerships were around for a much longer period of time, and so there's a tremendous number of them out there. But all three can really serve this purpose.
So let me kind of see if I can get this straight then. There's a family office, which is a place that they do business. It's not their family's primary business. It's where they run their finances and their holdings. Then they've got a family holding company, and then within that, different trusts. Is that sort of how it's working out?
Yeah, and in fact, that three-part structure that you mentioned is the global best-in-class structure for long-term wealth preservation and management, period. And so the virtual family office could be the general partner or the managing member. It's the quarterback. It controls the enterprise. It has the governance. It's where everything is run from, the legal, the accounting, the risk management, the insurance, the investments are all sort of run out of that control enterprise, even though it has few or no assets. It then controls the holding company, which is the bucket where all these assets are held. And then the holding company interest in turn, in my opinion, should all own by trust, because then you pick up the additional spendthrift benefit, which is some asset protection in the trust. It also gives you standby trustees to act on your behalf if you can't, and provides the privacy and confidentiality of trust, and it avoids probate, and ultimately cuts down legal and accounting fees and court costs upon death, and makes it more difficult to contest the estate. It has an inertia factor and chills estate contest because the family already has the assets, so the judge can't freeze them. They will transfer before the plaintiff can get there. So that combined three-part structure is where you would want to head if you could.
Okay.
It's very, very compelling.
Well, we've got the basics down. What I want to can you stick with us to do another segment, Tom?
Sure.
Okay, because I want to talk about, it sounds like there's all kinds of benefits to this that we haven't even gone over yet. I'd like to understand what the IRS really thinks about this, and I'd like to get your opinion on where this is today and where it's going. So we're going to be right back after this short break. More Tom Handler. Tom is the, we're going to talk about holding companies. We're going to do all kinds of good stuff. We'll be back after this. D, take it away.